through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Joining us right now, the Professor John Clayton. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's been kind of an adventure today with the wind.
Why?
Well, let's put it, we had the power go out.
Oh, my gosh.
Sunday night, you know, early Sunday morning at about 12:15. So I had to scramble around and, you know, make everything work then. And then at 9 o'clock today, the power went out for 1 hour. And so literally 90 seconds or maybe even 40 seconds before the start of the show, I was going to do the show on the app, and I was able to then see the lights come on, run in, get on the ISDN line. And then, of course, after that, I'm trying to, you know, get the camera back working and get all the different things around the house and everything set up. So it's been kind of adventurous.
Well, that is quite adventurous. I'm glad it all worked out. We're glad it happened fine. But
by the way, it went out in the whole neighborhood. So, I mean, Scott Service's house lost power.
Now,
so,
are we positive this isn't your producer, Curtis Rogers, trying to sabotage you?
No, because I had to call him and he had no idea.
Exactly. That seems a little fishy to me,
Stacy,
John.
I don't have any ends with Puget Sound Energy.
Not at all.
You may think I do, but I don't.
All right, all right. Well, John, I'm glad that you were able to get everything straightened down for your show, and I'm very happy that you're able to join us right now. We have plenty to talk about with the Seahawks on a bye week. I guess, you know, first things first, I'm going to start with the obvious, which is Russell Wilson has been kind of the story of the Seahawks through 5 weeks so far. Is he playing, I guess, I don't want to say better than you ever thought he could be, but in any way, has he surpassed your expectations of what he can do?
Let's put it this way, some of the best quarterback play I've ever seen. And remember, I've covered Hall of Famers like Terry Bradshaw. You know, I've been around all these top quarterbacks, and it's some of the best we've ever seen in National Football League history. I mean, to think that, you know, here he is, you know, number three as far as, you know, completion percentage, number two or three as far as yards per attempt. Mm-hmm. I mean, 19 touchdown passes in 5 weeks, and then to be able to put up the number of points he's been able to put up. Hey, I know that Aaron Rodgers is having a really great year, and we know that Russell Wilson's having a better year. I mean, you know, he's been not only, I think, the best quarterback so far in the first 5 weeks, he's been maybe the best player. And I think you can see the acknowledgement. You can see it certainly in the ratings, the TV ratings now. I mean, he is the man, and of course, you know, he's right now in a position to get this team a number one seed.
Aaron Rodgers, never heard of him. I'm going to go ahead and stay on offense for this one. DK Metcalf also out to an outstanding start to his sophomore year. He's got 92 yards at least in every single game. Have they had a receiver like him before since you've been covering this team?
Not because, you know, they've had tall outside receivers, but none that fast, none that big, and none that good. I mean, because, yeah, they've been able to, through the years, you know, whether it's Brian Blades or Steve Largent or, you know, Doug Baldwin, you know, now Tyler Lockett, have those, you know, good maneuvering type of route runners who can find a way to do incredible things. But to have a stud like this, that in his first 21 games, you know, he's outperformed guys like Julio Jones, Terrell Owens, and the only one he didn't outperform is Randy Moss, who in 21 games had 20 touchdown passes and 90 catches. But 80 catches for over 1,300 yards, I mean, Calvin Johnson didn't equal that. And so when you put all those numbers together, and particularly, you know, how of late Russell Wilson has almost been featuring him as the number one guy, particularly when he needs big plays, that it's remarkable. I mean, he had just about almost most of the targets in that last 94-yard drive, and he came up with the two big catches to help win that game.
John, how important, we're talking about MVPs, we're talking about, you know, reputations and, you know, power rankings and different things like that. How important are these next 5 weeks after the bye for the Seahawks?
Vital. Because, again, what it's going to do is establish you know, where they're going to be in the division. Because, you know, three of the four games after the bye are division games. And if you can come out winning two of those three, you're in really good shape. Because, I mean, you look at the remainder of the schedule. I mean, they have a 4-0-4 remaining schedule, but their toughest games, for the most part, are in the division. And really, the two real tough games right now, you know, you would put the Rams games, the two of those, along with the Buffalo Bills game on the road. But after that, you know, San Francisco, by the time they play, they may be almost completely out of the race because they've got seven games coming up that are impossible. They have the toughest closing schedule in the league this year, where Seattle has the easiest closing schedule. And so these games are going to be vital, because if you can just set up a 9-1 non-division schedule and go that way and go 4-2 in division, you're at least at 13 wins. That's going to be good enough for a number one seed.
Now, John, what is the expectations that you have for Damon Snacks Harrison? I think it's a tough situation in the sense that this is a guy who has not had a full offseason, has not been a part of a training camp. The you know, coaching staff decided to keep him out this last week because he wasn't physically ready. What can we expect from him here in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think slowly building him up to a point where he can get up to 25 to 28 snaps a game. You know, because, again, it's a matter that it's going to take some time. And so you start him out as slow as possible, whether it's going to be 10 plays, 15 plays, something like that. But you build it up. Because remember, it's like you're still in good shape with Jaron Reed, who at least took all the critics and, you know, slammed it down their throat by basically having a great game, to a point where Mike Zimmer came out at the half and says, we got to readjust everything on the offensive line to stop Jaron Reed. So he started playing like the $11.5 million defensive tackle, and Puna Ford continues to play well. But now I think it's a matter that, you know, and you saw it particularly, I think, was it the Dallas game? I think he had to be on the field for like 65 plays. Well, that's too much for Jaron Reed. So they need to spread it around. But getting a guy as talented as Snacks Harrison is huge, because he's such a great run stuffer. He can do a little bit on, you know, bullying the guard and, you know, getting inside and getting some pass rush. But his big thing is stopping the run, and that's going to be vital when you start to go into games against Arizona, the Rams, and several of the other teams.
Dan Quinn is gone from the Falcons. Bill O'Brien gone from the Houston Texans. Who's going to be next to go?
It's either going to be Adam Gase or Matt Patricia. I think that you know, Adam's the one probably sticking out the most, because here's an offensive coach, the 32nd ranked offense in the league. You know, he hasn't been able to get into the mind of Le'Veon Bell, and now it's to the point where they're trying to trade Le'Veon Bell, because, you know, Adam was so upset that Le'Veon Bell went on Twitter and started complaining about the lack of playing time that he had in the last game, coming off an injury where, you know, basically the coach Adam Gase put him out there five plays into a hamstring injury, and then he had to go on injured reserve. So that's a disaster. It's just inevitable that he's going to get fired. It's just a matter of when they want to pull the plug.
So I know Eric Bieniemy is always a name that's out there, but who are some of the other sort of hot coaches that could end up taking some of these spots?
Well, I mean, I think Bieniemy is one of the main guys, too. You know, you have to start looking at some of the offensive head coaches and all that stuff. I mean, you know, Sala, the defensive coordinator down in San Francisco, yeah, even though they're not having a good year, he's going to be under consideration. You know, Robert Sala, I mean, he looks like he could be one. I don't know if there's going to be too many, you know, second-time coaches, you know, getting opportunities again. I mean, I hate to say this, but, I mean, you know, Jason Garrett could be one of those, even though his play calling hasn't been great. But, you know, Jason might get some consideration. But, you know, most of the league right now, they want offensive coaches. And whoever's the hot offensive mind is going to get a chance to get an opportunity.
Just real quick, I was watching San Diego or the Chargers last night. And, you know, Gus Bradley, I know they lost the game, but I still think he's a pretty darn good defensive mind. Is he someone, do you think, that might get a second chance as a head coach?
I tend to doubt it, because I think what you're looking at, and you just watched it in the last couple of years, who are among the last coaches to get head coaching opportunities? Defensive coaches. I mean, you know, Vic Fangio got it 2 years ago, but you have to wait till you get the five offensive coaches. You know, this year there was five head coaching changes, but now there's going to probably be eight or nine this year. And so when you start to look at it, it's like the offensive coaches go first, and then after that, you kind of wait things out for the defensive coaches. So I think it's going to be very tough for Gus. And what Gus has to worry about right now, what about his head coach, Anthony Lynn? As much as people like him, I think respect him and think he's a good head coach, they can't finish games. And so now for the second straight year, whether they have Justin Herbert, who looks great, or whether they had Phillip Rivers, who's had a great career, they can't win the one possession games. They keep losing, and they lost another one last night.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Tom Wassel, Jake Heap, Stacey Ross here talking with John Clayton. John, I'm looking at the Seahawks' upcoming schedule. You've got at Arizona versus San Francisco, at Buffalo, at the Rams, and then versus Arizona. It's a tough tough slate of games. I think we'd all agree maybe the toughest part of their schedule coming up here. When I look at this, though, the team that surprisingly stands out that I wouldn't have thought in week one is the Rams. I mean, they're essentially a game behind you. You know, they have been more dominant than I thought they would be. I don't know that they've been, you know, the offensive kind of powerhouse that they have been in years past, or even that Seattle is this year, but have they surprised you at all, and are they the other team to beat in the NFC West?
Yeah, they surprised me, and they are the other team to beat in the NFC West, because what you're seeing is that I still contend that Sean McVay really struggled last season because he couldn't get the loss of the Super Bowl out of his mind. So his play calling slipped. Everything just kind of slipped. Well, now I think you can see he's re-energized, he's recharged, and he's really doing well. His play calling, I mean, he's getting, you know, more split sets with the runnings, you know, getting with the pre-snap motion. That's going well. You can see that defensively they surprised it. Now, again, I realize that their four wins were against the NFC East, so they captured that title in the worst division in football history. But you also see he was able to come back down 25 points or so in that game in Buffalo and almost win that one. So I think that they are for real. Now, again, they suffered an injury. One of their safeties, Jordan Fuller, he had to go on IR. But that's the thing that's so amazing. The Aaron Donald is having one of the greatest starts for a defensive player we've ever seen. He had 4 sacks on Sunday, 7.5 for the season, and we're only 5 games in. And so everybody's got to figure out a way to stop Aaron Donald, and nobody has.
John, we were kind of talking about, you know, what happens if the Seahawks defense doesn't take a big step forward. I think their ceiling is higher than they've been playing. I think getting Jamal Adams back will help. But is there a team you can think of that went to a Super Bowl, whether or not they won it, but maybe the most recent team you can think of that really struggled on defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to go back and look at the stats again, but I think the New Orleans Saint team, you know, because, you know, they were always giving up yards and points and all those different things, and Drew Brees was able to overcome it. You know, one of the Super Bowl runs for the Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning, they had similar issues. The difference is this year is that everybody's having problems on defense. I mean, he was like, okay, you look at Green Bay, they're giving up about as many points as Seattle. Look at New Orleans. I mean, they gave up 30 points or 27 points to a rookie quarterback last one night. And so the quarterback play is so good at a historically great level that most of the good teams that play good teams are going to give up 27 to 30 points. That's just in the cards right now. I think, you know, more people have to recognize it, but also as the season goes on, they've got to correct it. Where it's going to correct in the stats is that, you know, other than, say, the teams in the NFC West and Buffalo, what offense is going to really put up good numbers against them? You know, because, again, they take on either bad teams or young quarterbacks.
John, speaking of the Buffalo Bills, I mean, the Bills and the Titans face off tonight in the Battle of Undefeateds. I mean, this is going to be a pretty fun one tonight. Who do you expect to win?
I bet the Bills, mainly for several reasons. I mean, they're playing at a very high level. I mean, Josh Allen is really arguably in the mix for MVP with what he's been able to do. You know, after being a quarterback that averaged 19.2 points a start, now he's putting up 28 to 30 points, and he's getting the ball downfield, particularly to Stephon Diggs. Their defense is good. And so I think that the Bills are for real, and the Titans may have been for real, but how can they come back and think about winning, you know, when they have, they don't even know how many players they're going to have, because remember, you know, most of the players are on the COVID list. They have like a 10 or 11 players on the COVID list. You know, they've been able to activate maybe 3 or 4, and they're gonna have to get more out there just to be able to field the 48 man roster. And so that is going to be the challenge. And then also they haven't practiced. Remember, practice is important. And, you know, the only thing they were able to do is have a little light walkout on Saturday, and that's it.
Yeah, that's a great point, John. The Titans are really at a disadvantage in this matchup for sure. One question that I have for you, John, with Dak Prescott's injury situation, what does it mean for his contract status? I know the Cowboys went out there and they said, hey, you know, we're still wanting Dak to be a part of our long term future, but their contract negotiations have not gone well between the two sides. I mean, what do you see for the future?
I don't see any negotiation. It's just a decision, and I think the decision that they're going to have to franchise him, because, you know, can you give a $39 million a year contract to a quarterback coming off a compound fracture injury when you won't know until May how it's going? I mean, you'll have a pretty good idea. You know, Jerry Jones wants to take care of his own players, and he wants to take care of Dak. But the fact that he didn't get a deal when he could have had it for, you know, around $35 million, that's bad on his part. What's going to be bad and what's going to make a tough decision is if you put the $37.7 million into Dak Prescott, you literally have only $20 or $30 million on a $175 million cap to be able to take care of the rest of your team. That's not good. And so I still think they'll stand by Dak, but they're only going to stand by him on the one-year deal.
He is the Professor John Clayton. You can hear him every day on 710 ESPN Seattle during his own show. Joins all of our shows during the week as well. We always learn something new. Thanks so much, John.
Hey, thank you.
All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it. Take it.
All right, Jacob, this may be the easiest question of all time, maybe. What has to be the biggest area of improvement for the Seahawks moving forward?
Well, you might think that I'm just going to say defense here, but I'm actually going to be pointing to third downs on both sides of the ball. And here in cut number seven, Pete Carroll talking specifically about the progress made that the Seahawks defense had on third downs.
Yeah, we had our best night on third down. You know, we were 40-something, you know, which was that's a move in the right direction. The turnovers are huge for us, yeah. But really the third down stops are really where we have to continue to work on. Points are down the last couple weeks. I know it's not a major difference, but we're transitioning, and we are changing right now, and it's good.
Now, this is the area of the football game that separates the boys from the men here. And I think the Seahawks have done an outstanding job on first and second down. That's why they've been so explosive as an offense. Defensively, they have yet to get anybody off the field on third downs except for the Minnesota Viking game in third and short situations. In order for this team to improve and to really go against some of the better teams in the league and to win in the playoffs and get to a Super Bowl, you have to perform better on third downs, both offensively and defensively. And that is one area that if the Seahawks are looking to improve on over the bye, it's got to be third downs.
Second down. Seahawks expecting a number of players back after the bye, Stacey. Now, will Josh Gordon be one of them?
You know, I wish I knew the answer, but I'll just make sure we all have the details here so that we know. So the NFL is supposed to review and get back to you on whether or not you'll be reinstated 60 days after you apply for reinstatement. So not from the date that you're suspended or anything. That date, though, for Josh Gordon, the 60 days after he's applied for reinstatement, has now passed. And in fact, it passed a while ago. And so I think that the Seattle Seahawks, when they signed him in the beginning of September, were expecting that he would probably be reinstated soon. Now, publicly, Pete Carroll told us that, well, I don't know. I mean, I can't say, you know, we just felt like we liked him here and we wanted to, you know, basically have him as an option to come back. It could be that maybe another team was looking at him, or it could just be that Josh Gordon has made public his desire to come back to the Seahawks, and the Seahawks maybe had a feeling that he'd be able to get back soon. So I don't know, as, you know, a very blunt answer. I don't know what's taking so long. Even if he was going to be denied reinstatement, he should have been told already. So not sure what's happening with the league there. It makes me think it could happen any day, either, you know, accepting or denying reinstatement. But that's kind of what I've been thinking for about a month. So we'll see. Outside of that, though, they will get Jamal Adams, Rasheem Green, and Philip Dorsett back after the bye.
I just had this awful, horrifying image go through my head of DK Metcalf getting hurt and them having to get Josh Gordon.
Why are you saying this, Tom?
Well, because I need to share it with my friends.
Don't tell me this. Don't you put that, what is it, Jake?
That bad juju. Don't put that bad juju on
me.
DK.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I really am.
Josh Gordon.
Jake, what are we going to learn about the Seahawks in the next 5 weeks of the season?
Well, the next 5 weeks are going to be the most important part of the schedule. To me, there are really three things that you're going to determine in the next 5 weeks. One, the way the NFC West title is going to be shaped up for the Seahawks. They have the opportunity to truly separate themselves from the rest of the pack in the NFC West. The second is the NFC number one seed race between them and the Green Bay Packers. It seems very clear that those are the two teams that are really going to be competing for the number one seed at this point. But we're still early on in the season. And number three, Russell Wilson's MVP campaign. At this point in 5 weeks, as John Clayton came on our show and said, very clearly Russell Wilson is the leading candidate for the MVP. Now, can he carry that through with some of the tougher teams that he will be facing within his division and with also a team that is being respected heavily around the NFL and the Buffalo Bills? Those 5 weeks are going to determine if Russell Wilson can wrap and seal that MVP campaign along with the team wrapping and sealing their NFC West title hopes and their hopes for the number one seed in the NFC.
Fourth down. What are the Seahawks enforcing during the bye week that's different from any year previous?
Well, very clearly stated, Pete Carroll and actually with Bob, Dave, and Moore yesterday, Chris Carson came on and talked about the fact that they will not be allowed to go home. They will not be allowed to travel anywhere during the bye, that they are required to stay here in Seattle during the bye and get tested every single day. So this is a serious thing, and this Seahawks organization is taking it as seriously as possible to make sure and ensure that their players are not going to have any positive tests. They want their guys to stay on top of it. And so I think the bye week is traditionally a week that you get to get away from the facility. You get to go home. You get to go on vacation. You get to, you know, rest up and take care of yourself wherever you want to do that. Well, not this year. This year, there's obviously different circumstances. We're in the midst of a pandemic, and the Seahawks are doing everything that they can to make sure that they are not going to be missing or delaying any of their games.
All right, if you missed the show, you can always listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Now, guys, the three of us disagree about which Seahawks win has been the most dramatic. Personally, I think I've been right, but I'll give you guys another chance to argue your case. We'll all explain why we think each game has been most dramatic next in the halftime show.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
It's the halftime show. I'm Tom, Jake, and Stacey, taking you back through what we've talked about so far, some of the biggest stories you need to know about. Let's go ahead and get started with what we think has been the most dramatic of the Seahawks' 5 wins so far this season, in my opinion, in my humble opinion. As a humble person, it is definitively the win over the New England Patriots. 1 yard to go, 1 play to run, 3 seconds left, and they get the stop of Cam Newton. You guys got to agree with me on this one.
But I would like to, Stacey. I would like to, but I have to campaign. I have to campaign for the game that I picked, which was the Dallas Cowboys. And really, that game had so much drama in it, and it really started with the DK Metcalf gaffe that he had. Had an easy touchdown. He thinks he has it, literally trying to walk into the end zone, showboating, and Trevon Diggs catches up from behind to knock the ball out of the back of the end zone, it being a touchback. And from there, chaos ensued throughout the entire game. But yet, Curtis Rogers, yet, at the end of the game, he gets a chance, as Harry from Dumb and Dumber once said.
Oh, man.
He gets a chance to redeem himself by hauling in the go-ahead touchdown.
Going to something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
That's how I felt. That was the conversation that I had in my head with DK Metcalf after he hauled in that touchdown. But still, from that point there, the game wasn't over. Dallas Cowboys still have enough time left. They get all the way down to the Seattle 26. And Ryan Neal, filling in for Jamal Adams, practice squad, active just that day, comes up with the game-sealing touchdown. I mean, that's a pretty incredible finish.
I do love that story. I love that it was Ryan Neal of everyone, and the feeling that must have been in that moment had to just be indescribable. Tom, how about you?
I put out a Twitter poll to see what the people thought of these three games. 778 votes.
Yep.
70% say Minnesota.
Oh, this is wrong.
28% say New England. Only 2% for Dallas.
It's because people don't remember. Jake has a great case. I would say Dallas is absolutely up there with the most dramatic finishes. The thing with Dallas is we kind of forget. We're like, oh, well, they had to get a touchdown. That looked like a Hail Mary. Maybe there was no chance. There was absolutely a chance.
All I will say is that all these people on Twitter, I'm assuming that most of them did not hear my pitch. Because if they heard my pitch.
Absolutely.
They might change their mind.
The disrespect has been noted.
Second most watched game of the year, by the way, that was Seattle and
yes,
Dallas.
It was.
Yeah, I said Minnesota. I just thought that this game the other day was dramatic from the beginning. And as I guess Mike and I agreed, Salk and I agreed before, the fact that they had to make plays at the end, both on defense and offense, like if the defense didn't make that fourth down and third down stop, the offense doesn't even get the ball back. So that was one miracle, followed by like two or three more, including the one where the referees called the incomplete pass a fumble, reviewed it, upheld it, and then away we went.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that Minnesota game was dramatic.
Next. We also talked about DK Metcalf's potential. Now, he's had at least 92 receiving yards in every single game so far. Shout out to Jake for noticing that the other day. He's also had a touchdown in every single game, with the exception of one. I believe that was against Miami. Jamal Adams, DK Metcalf's teammate, tweeted that DK reminds him of a new era Megatron. Also clarified that he's taking no arguments at this time. Happy Tuesday. So don't doubt Jamal Adams there. He's not willing to hear your argument. But you know what? I think we can all say that DK Metcalf certainly has an insanely high ceiling. In fact, the three of us kind of tried to think about which Seahawk playmaker he reminded us of, and we tried to be a little creative. So, Jake, when I asked DK Metcalf is the greatest playmaker since blank, you said... What?
Yeah, well, Tom Wassel actually came up and said this name in show prep, and I went on to then do the history dive and research of this, and Joey Galloway was outstanding his first four seasons here in Seattle. Absolutely outstanding. And you look at him and his in the stats of his first four seasons, 1,000 yards total from scrimmage each of those four seasons, 36 touchdowns in those first four seasons. That's 9 a year. And he had 4 kick or punt returns within that time span. This guy was an absolute star early on in his career in Seattle. The problem was is he just didn't play on any teams that really people across the country really gave about, and didn't really play for a quarterback that was an all-star or was a pro bowler. Played for a variety of different players.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys like Calvin Johnson who do go out there and amass big stats without great quarterbacks, too. I guess he had Matt Stafford, but yeah, Galloway was certainly in that situation. All right, I said that DK Metcalf, he's the best playmaker on this team since Richard Sherman. Different position, different personalities, certainly. But when you think of the 2013, 2014, 2012 teams, you think of Russell, you think of Marshawn and Richard Sherman. That was kind of like the Trinity back then. The three of those guys. He was always at the center of everything. Big plays, visible, clutch. I mean, I can remember off the top of my head the types of plays that he made. And I can remember games where he wasn't thrown at all because his career got to a point where nobody even wanted to throw in his direction. He had that kind of impact on the game. And he wasn't afraid to tell you about it either. DK Metcalf already is having that kind of impact on the game. I mean, it seems like every play, there's the potential for him to break off a big one. And it doesn't matter if it's 4th and 10 on the final possession or if it's 2nd and 17, you know, in the second quarter. He can change a game basically at any point in said game.
Jake said Joey Galloway. Tom said Richard Sherman. I said Marshawn Lynch. I think that they both have this ability to do something that seems just improbable based on next level physicality. So even on a field where everyone else is the best athlete, wherever they come from, whatever school they're from, they still like out physical the guy next to them. It's just this finding this kind of strength or, you know, just ability that from deep within. I don't know how Marshawn Lynch managed to do it.
I think it's also a mentality.
A mentality. That's exactly what it is. I don't know how Marshawn Lynch managed to do it, but that was the most impressive thing about him. It was awe-inspiring, and I think DK Metcalf has that ability. We've only seen it for 2 years, but I think it's a rare quality. All right, so moving on to the third story. We talked to John Clayton earlier today. Tom, something stood out to you from our conversation with the professor.
Yeah, we've been having this conversation about whether or not the Seahawks defense allowing all this yardage and all these points, if that's going to be sustainable, and how could a team like that possibly win the Super Bowl? Well, Clayton did bring up one good example. The 2006 Colts, who won the Super Bowl, they went 12-4. They were second in the league in points, third in yards offensively. Now, on defense, they were 23rd in points allowed, 21st in yards allowed. So that's really not good. And I know the Seahawks are a little bit worse than that right now, but that's pretty terrible. But by the time they got to the playoffs that year, what did they do? They had to play a wild card game first. They won 23-8. Divisional, 15-6 they win. They win the 34-38 game over the Patriots, and then 29-17 they beat the Bears. I mean, that's a pretty darn good defensive performance, defensive run through the playoffs for a team that was getting pelted all year.
Yeah, it's a great example, and a great example of showing that, hey, even though things could go wrong during the regular season, you can turn it around, and this defense can turn it around. I would like for them to get more towards the middle of the pack or the 20s to 15s in terms of total yardage. The Seahawks are close to that 2006 Colts in terms of points against or points scored on their defense, but they are dead last, historically dead last, right now, which is the difference between this defensive unit and that group. So this group certainly needs to get better to give their team the best chance to get to the big dance.
All right, we are getting... Jake, that rhymes. That's great. That was a great job.
Yeah, thank you.
We are getting Tuesday Night Football tonight. When's the last time the league had a game on a Tuesday? You can guess now if you want. No looking it up, no cheating. We'll take a trip down memory lane next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacy, reading you some of the top trends you're going to see today on your own timelines. When you want us to include one, go ahead and tag us at Stacy Rost, at JT Heaps, 9 at Tom Wassel. Let's go ahead and get started with a little bit of trivia for you guys. So the Bills and the Titans are going to kick off tonight for Tuesday Night Football. I believe that's at, correct me if I'm wrong, 5 p.m. our time, I believe. I think it's 8 p.m. Eastern. Not entirely sure. I need to double check. But Tuesday Night Football happening tonight. Now, I asked you guys before the break, when was the last time the NFL had Tuesday Night Football? I think in my mind, I initially thought, didn't this happen earlier this year? Because we've had so many weird schedules. But no, there was a doubleheader for a Monday night, but no Tuesday night so far. This is actually the first Tuesday night game since December of 2010. Now, here's the story behind that game. The Eagles and Vikings were going to play, but the game was postponed to a Tuesday night just an hour or so before kickoff. It was going to be a Sunday night game because a blizzard was going to hit. So that ends up getting pushed to Tuesday night. Then you have one of the best kind of like underdog wins games ever. Minnesota was a 14.5-point underdog, and they beat Philadelphia 24-14. Who knows if the Titans will be able to beat the Bills, who are, I think, a 3-point favorite for tonight's game. But I think two significantly better teams, a little more better matched, going to face off tonight for Tuesday Night Football. But kind of a cool story, Jake.
Anybody want to guess the quarterbacks in that game?
Nope.
Curtis can join in if he wants.
Well,
these are guys. Well, one of them you know.
Curtis, go ahead.
What, the Vikings?
Vikings,
Saints,
Eagles. No.
Vikings, Eagles. Because that one,
December,
I believe, was moved to a Tuesday because of the Metrodome roof caving in.
No.
Curtis, if you were listening to my story, you'll know that it was because of a blizzard.
Because of the snow. Snow piled on the Metrodome roof, which caved in because of that blizzard.
Well, Curtis,
Stacey, if
yes.
you
last
knew
time
the
I
yes.
checked, I said that
yes.
there was a blizzard.
Get
him, the point
you
is
don't
that
know
there's
the
a blizzard. The
I
roof
do.
Was fine before the
You're
blizzard.
Wrong,
Curtis.
I'm right.
Who's the quarterback?
Who's the quarterbacks of those two teams?
The Metrodome collapsed a few weeks before. The quarterbacks were Michael Vick on one side for the Eagles. I'm sure you've heard of him. And for Minnesota, a little guy named Joe Webb.
Ah, Joe Webb.
Remember Joe Webb? He always popped up at weird times. He was also like a receiver and I think like a kick returner, but he could be quarterback at time. A nice little career going there.
Yeah, the first Taysom Hill before Taysom Hill. Yeah, Joe Webb. He did have a nice career. He was a long time
backup
quarterback.
Taysom made a play yesterday, man.
He sure did.
Running through there like that.
Do you guys remember that game, by the way, from 2010? I don't.
I don't remember watching.
No. I do not. I'm not going to lie.
You know what's funny, though? I do remember, because there was a big snowstorm that weekend in Connecticut, having to get a hotel room next to ESPN. They booked us all hotel rooms to stay the night before to make sure we could all get to work the next day because we were getting so much snow. I do remember that.
How nice of them, yet how inconvenient. Wouldn't it have been nice to just be like, can't get in?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. By the way, I wake up the next day, okay, and I'm out in the parking lot. This is early. This is when I was working on Colin's show. Guess who's out there shoveling snow in the parking lot for other people?
Skip Bayless.
Herm Edwards.
What?
Herman Edwards is out there in his, like, button-down, you know, white shirt with a tie and a jacket shoveling people out of the parking lot, working like a maniac. It was so funny. God bless him.
Moving on. The ESPN Power
Stacey
Rankings.
Unimpressed.
Yeah. The ESPN Power Rankings came out earlier today. The New York Jets, you guys, murdered in the rankings. So each ranking has its kind of biggest weakness for the team. So for Seattle, biggest weakness, pass defense. Right. We all get it. The New York Jets coming in at 32-0-5. They were ranked 32 last week. Didn't improve at all. Their biggest weakness on ESPN is listed as football.
Yikes. I mean, I think this is about of a low point as you can get if you're the New York Jets. I mean, this is an organization that is just, gosh, it's so surprising to see this organization just find itself in this hole that it's been in for multiple years now. And they just cannot get any consistency. And you look into Seattle and you look at the opposite. They're number one in the polls right now in these ESPN Power Rankings, and the outstanding consistency that Seattle has had over, you know, Pete Carroll's tenure. It's absolutely outstanding.
Does Adam Gase finish this year, Tom?
I don't think so. I really don't. In fact, I thought he would be the first to go. But, you know, my question about the Jets is, you know, going back to our conversation before about who can identify quarterbacks early and whether or not it's easy to see who belongs and who doesn't. I never thought Sam Darnold was going to be a big-time quarterback in this league. Can he play? Yeah, maybe. I think he's, like, a little bit worse than Andy Dalton. I really believe that. But playing under Adam Gase here, I'm not sure if that guy's doing him a favor, if he's helping him out. If he's doing him a disservice,
certainly not doing him any favor.
What do you think? Well, right, but I mean, how much better would Darnold be?
If I'm Sam Darnold, I think he would be much better. I think if I'm Sam Darnold, I am counting out the ways of how I can try and figure out how to get the heck out of New York. Like, you got to get out of that organization. And I don't know if they could bring anybody in to fix this in the amount of time that Sam Darnold needs. I mean, Sam needs to get out. I personally think that Sam can be a very good quarterback in this league, given the right tools around him. I think that he can be a better player than Andy Dalton. He has the ability to create, but he has been in a very, very rough situation here. So Adam Gase is not helping him out at all.
He's only been there for two, right?
Yeah, but Adam Gase is just significant. He's bad. Like, he is a bad head coach. They're one of the most penalized teams in the league. It's not just because, you know, of their defense. I mean, that was a problem for him with Miami. It's not just inheriting a bad team. He's a bad coach.
He is a bad coach. And Todd Bowles wasn't there for, I mean,
I'm sorry.
You know, that would,
you're
that
right.
would make
yeah.
it. Yeah, he was only there for a season or two under Sam. So I think just a season. So I think you're looking at a situation where, you know, now you're with Adam Gase and Gase has clearly lost this organization, lost the locker room and everything, and that is a really difficult position to be in as a quarterback of that franchise.
All right, going to look at Denver. This is a bit weird. So the Denver Broncos were going to face the New England Patriots this week in week 5, but that's been moved to October 18th. Because of positive COVID tests on New England's side. So this has effectively been Denver's bye week. That was a controversial decision because by then players had already been practicing. So I think you can say effectively Denver didn't really get a bye week. Melvin Gordon tweeting, "Ain't no way we practiced all week and they canceled our game." Other players tweeted how unhappy they were about, you know, practicing and then essentially not really getting a bye week after all. I know that guys aren't going to be like traveling all over the place or even some guys going back home at all for the bye week, depending on where they live. But I still would have wanted a week of rest. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. I mean, guys rely on that bye week to get their bodies, their minds right, to reset and get themselves ready to finish out the season. If you're telling me the bye week, it actually wasn't a bye week, but it was a full week of practice, I would be so frustrated. And I know that any of these Seahawks players would be extremely frustrated. So, again, it just goes to emphasize the importance of doing everything in your power to do what you can to not get COVID, to not test positive for COVID. And I know that the Seahawks and Pete Carroll and everybody in that organization is doing everything they can and taking all the precautions necessary to try and see if they can make that happen this year. Because it really messes everything up outside of the health conditions. It just messes everything up for your schedule and the way that you're approaching, you know, practice and the rest of the season.
Yeah, clearly it's unfair, but I mean, we knew that there could be some weird circumstances coming into this season with COVID and games getting moved around. I mean, if they wanted to at the end of the year, I think I heard maybe Adam Schefter talking about this, like they could add a week 18 and just make it a bye. Mm. So like everybody gets a little, or maybe you do it a bye week before. I don't know. They could rearrange the schedule some way possibly, but I don't know that that's going to make anybody in this situation feel any better. I mean, it really does. It's unfortunate for them, but
Tennessee, get it together. Get it together. We're through the first quarter of the season, but already we've learned three important things about the Seahawks team. We'll tell you that next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.